Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
That was Chelsea Dagger. This is the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. I'm Scott King, and usually the great Chris Bowden handles this part of the show, setting it up, introducing it. It's what he does best. But Chris is sidelined with a upper body injury. He's got a sore throat that he has to get better for the pre- and post-game show tonight, so you'll hear from him soon. It's Thursday, so if you're listening before the game, you'll hear Chris tonight. He's doing just fine. Today I'm joined by Joel Knowles, the sports editor of the Chicago Tribune. Joe, thanks for being here.
Good to be here, Scott. Thanks.
Now, on Twitter, you're at jknowles31. Is that an old hockey number?
No, it's actually an old Little League number. They considered 13 unlucky, so all the jerseys were numbered 1 through 15, but the 13 one was transposed to 31, and I got that one, so I kind of stuck with it.
So safe to assume that's in all your internet passwords now, number 31, because 13 is unlucky?
It's in a few of them, yeah.
Now, today we got to start with the also Kendall Coyne joining us later, actually, calling in Olympic gold medalist. Not bad to call into the podcast here. Appreciate her time. She's been making the rounds, doing a lot of things for kids and all over. It'd be great to talk to her, see what life is like after the gold medal. But we have to start today with unfortunate Blackhawks news. They've been mathematically eliminated from playoff contention for the first time in 10 years after Tuesday's 5-1 loss to the Colorado Avalanche. Now, Joe, is this something that you have to, when you see this happen, you're following it, do you soak it in right away that it's happened, that they're not in the playoffs? Or did we have about a month and change where we knew this was coming?
I think we've seen it coming in the second half of the season. The team was really struggling to put together any kind of a consistent streak. They've had an unfortunate run of luck where they'd score the first goal in a game and then give up that lead and never regain it. So I think we've had time to prepare for it, but I have to say it hurts anybody who's been following the Blackhawks. Let's say if you jumped on the bandwagon recently, you have to be wondering what you're going to do with your time now in April and May, because without the playoffs, without the Hawks in the playoffs, it's going to seem a lot different around here.
Joe's written a lot of columns this season about what the Hawks have been going through and all their struggles. You can find on the Tribs website. Joe was also on the NHL Network a couple months ago. You did the arena cam.
Yeah, I did that.
I didn't know that was happening. I just saw you tweet it.
They asked me. It was kind of a last-minute thing, and they got me out at the arena there to talk about the Blackhawks. I had written a piece for the Tribune that was titled, Are the Blackhawks Broken? And at the time, it certainly looked like if they weren't broken, they were breaking. And I think that even though things have gone badly this year, there are some reasons for hope. It's just there was a little different feeling the last time the Hawks played meaningless games in Chicago. If you go back to before Joel Quenneville arrived, last year of Dennis Savard's tenure as coach, they missed the playoffs. But there was a lot of optimism, I think, you could see there. You know, there was a good young core of players on the rise. You had a 19-year-old Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. You had a young Duncan Keith. You had a great find that they picked up in Patrick Sharp, who was turning into a 30-goal scorer. You had Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien. You know, the core of the teams that would eventually become champions was there. And this time, it's a little bit of a different feeling. It feels like there's a decline happening because some of those core players are aging. And you're hoping that the young players who've come up in the last couple of years will be able to step forward and, you know, advance and grow. But it just hurts a little bit now to see a team that has really been kind of a leader in the community of sports teams around here as far as success goes, to see them on hard times. Now, it's a little unsettling.
You're touching on something that I want to get to with the core guys, why I think this season has been so disappointing for the players and obviously the fan base, is you look at the core guys. You look at Kane, Toews, 29. Kane, I don't think he really regressed at all this season. I mean, he's got 70 points right now. He gets hot and can finish with around 80 for this season. He can usually do a little more the last few, but he will again. Toews, 29. Keith, 34. Seabrook, 32. So, yeah, hockey's a rough game, and they've played about, when you put it all together, playoffs and Olympics, they've played about two extra seasons to guys that weren't in the playoffs. So that's a lot of miles, and you do lose a step when you get older. But are these guys that old where they should be losing the steps they seem to have lost this season?
It's hard to say. I mean, you know, when you look around the NHL, it's pretty clear it's a young man's game. I mean, you look at the Connor McDavids or the Patrick Laines of the world. You know, there's teenagers in the league who are really successful. It does seem to be, to me, that the decline happened kind of rapidly. So I don't know if there's anything If there's still a lot of gas left in the tank, I would think so. Although you're right about the stress of playing heavy minutes in the course of some long playoff seasons. I think in Patrick Kane's case, you can still see that he's got the ability he had. He doesn't look like he's lost anything, although missing Artemi Panarin has affected his game. I think Kane would probably tell you that in an honest moment, that Panarin was a big plus for him. You know, Panarin's ability to sort of get in the position. They had a great chemistry right from the beginning. I don't think Kane's managed to find that with anyone else. Jonathan Toews, a little bit of a mystery. He's come on stronger lately, but I think he's a better player than what we've seen so far. And Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, maybe they aren't capable of playing the sort of minutes they were playing before. Maybe if there was a little bit more depth on defense, Coach Quenneville could find a way to ease them off that heavy workload. I don't think they've completely lost it and are ready to you know, go into retirement, but you've seen some regression. Like I said, it's a speed game in the NHL. It's a game where quickness matters, and you can't help but wonder if maybe that is one of the reasons they've slipped up a little this year. If that one step that you lose comes back to haunt you on a play, that it can mean that, you know, that's the difference between a goal that gets in your own net or one that you get in the other team's net. So I'd like to think there's more left there, but I guess we'll have to see. This year may not be the best indicator.
And you can be certain that these guys are going to work really hard in the offseason, too, to try to get back to where they were. I know Duncan Keith has an extra trainer besides the Blackhawks strength and conditioning coach, so he's a guy who always works really hard, and that's why you see him log so many minutes night in and night out. So I think they will do everything they can to regain those steps that they might have lost this season. And Joe, I want to know, because it's on my career bucket list to do the arena cam, what's it like? Are you looking? I've heard it's just like looking at a little red dot.
You are.
And do they just say go and they start asking you questions? Do you know what you're looking at?
I'll tell you, it was a great experience. They did let me know what the questions would be, which was helpful because I was a little nervous. That was good to know. And yes, you're looking up at a little light that's like, I think it's like under the scoreboard. So it's a weird feeling. You're alone in the arena. I was there a couple hours before the game started. You're looking out at that beautiful sheet of ice. It's just been zambonied. And you're standing in the penalty box, which is, you know, always been a dream of mine. And yeah, it's a little disorienting to look up there. You're speaking to someone through headphones. But it was great. They were very professional and well-prepared. I'd do it again if they ever asked me.
Another unfortunate thing that's been in news is obviously a lot of layoffs at the Tribune. And now today you're reading that Time Magazine, Sports Illustrated's parent company is probably going to sell them. They're already estimating another 1,000 layoffs there. Is it just the news business? Is it because of technology? Is it because of the economy and budgets? Why is the industry having such a hard time right now? Or do you think it's maybe all industries too right now?
Well, there's obviously a lot of disruption in industries in general, and I think the media business in general. Advertising across all media has been a bit of a problem, other than the mammoth search engines, you know, the Googles of the world and the social media networks. I think advertising is under pressure everywhere, in television, radio. In our business, when we lost classified advertising to the internet a while back, that was a substantial loss of revenue for us. You know, at one point, the newspaper industry was where you'd go to place an ad for selling a car or selling a house or posting a job. There really was no other alternative other than sticking a post-it note on the grocery store bulletin board. So we had a lock on that business for a long time, and when we lost it, we lost quite a bit, and we lost it pretty suddenly. In our business, it is always hard to say goodbye to colleagues who've served us well. You know, I think you're seeing that there's a lot of transition in our business. Technology certainly has affected us in terms of you know, how we distribute our content, and it also affects our business model. But I think there's some smart people working on that, trying to figure it out. And hopefully we'll bounce back from this. It's very regrettable when you've worked with people for a long time and you have to say goodbye to them, but that's the nature of the business. It is a business. We're for-profit business, and sometimes those hard decisions have to get made.
Is it we were talking about podcasts before our show. Is it a matter of just outlets and the industry kind of evolving where there are podcasts? Maybe like some outlets do now, there's just short highlights and video clips in addition to writing. Do you think different news outlets are going to have to evolve that way?
Yeah, I obviously think you're going to have to cater to a much different audience. I think of the attention span of people is a lot different than it used to be. The expectation is of an audience is probably a lot different than it was, you know, even 5 years ago in terms of the sort of content you provide and how available it is. There's really a glut of media out there when you think about it. When I grew up in Chicago, there were four daily newspapers and maybe five television stations. Now there's 500 television stations and two daily newspapers. There's also, I think, a whole generation of people, and I count my kids among these, that don't really find the newspaper is essential as it used to be. They look, there's a lot of things you can find on the internet if you want to find news. There's also a million places you can avoid news on the internet. It's a different audience, and we're going to have to do what we can do to adapt to it. It is a challenge. I think we're not the only ones facing it. But the Tribune's been around for, what is it now, 168 years. I think we'll be around for a while longer, and we'll figure it out.
Appreciate you helping me pull back the curtain a little bit there. I know people were really interested in what's going on. One more Blackhawks thing I want to touch on before we get Kendall Coyne on the phone here.
Sure.
Since January 1st, so this year, the Hawks have scored the first goal in 27 of their last 36 games, but only registered a 12-12-3 record when scoring first in that stretch. Why have they had so much trouble holding leads this year, you think?
It's a really great question because you know, Scott, that usually the team that scores first goes on to win the game almost. It's overwhelming. I think there's a sense that maybe once they've got that first goal that they can get teams to bend to their will in the way they used to in the past, that lead would be something they could protect. I think they've missed Corey Crawford greatly, and the defense as a whole is not what it used to be. And I say that not just about the defensemen, but you know, you lose a player like Marian Hosso, such a great two-way player. They're just not defensively where they used to be, and I think the goaltending has let them down. I don't think they have an answer yet. You know, we talked about some of the other players who are aging. Corey Crawford is 33, and his status for next year is also uncertain. I don't think you have an answer in Berube or Forsberg, or certainly you already know you don't have one in Jeff Glass. I think they need to figure that out going into next season because you can't keep squandering those leads, and they also need to build on them a little more. They don't seem to be able to do that. They get that first goal, and the other night in Colorado, they give up the next five, and it's been hard to watch that because I think it's a similar thing happened with the Jets. They jumped out to lead and gave up the next five goals, and you know, to see a team like the Jets almost toying with the Hawks and taking pity on them was hard to watch. And the Sabres beat the Hawks, I think, for the first time since I don't know, in almost 10 years,
right around there. Yeah,
this isn't the same team it used to be, and I think they're even having a hard time, the Blackhawks themselves, realizing that. I think they have a lot of pride, and they get a lead before, and that was something where in the past they could build on that lead or at least protect it, and I just don't think they have the depth across all three or four lines and on defense that they used to have, and that's biting them in the butt.
I think you just wrote a column in the podcast. That was you really did break down all the issues. I feel like it's something, you know, something great you touched on, that it's not just the defense from the defense. It's forwards like Marian Hossa that they're missing. I completely agree with that. And it's also that defense trying to transition out and get that puck to the forwards. Because I like this group of forwards. Look at Alex DeBrincat, a rookie. I think we might, if we have time, we'll talk a little bit about what he's done and why it's so special. But you look at young players like him, Nick Schmaltz, who are really developing well and could be really good top players in this league. And like we said before, Kane's not missing anything. Of course, you have disappointment with Brandon Saad. But I think, Joe, what's your take? It seems like in a past month and a half, I kind of went from being like, you know, Saad's really disappointing to he's just not getting lucky. He's right in front of the net. His stick's down. He's just not getting lucky, especially lately. So I think that's a guy who's definitely going to have a bounce back season out of everybody.
Yeah, if you look at his shot percentage, it's way off what his career normal would be. So I think he's getting chances, but for whatever reason, they're not going in. And maybe that's just a sign of the way things are going for this team. I think we all expected Brandon Saad, when he came back to the Blackhawks, to be the player we saw when he left. And in Columbus, he was a 30-goal scorer who could kill penalties. And those kind of players don't fall out of the trees. So that's why you figured you might not miss Panarin as much. But you look at Panarin, I think he has more than twice as many points as Saad has this year. And Columbus is going to be in the playoffs, and the Blackhawks aren't. Saad was supposed to lift the play of Jonathan Toews, and that was sort of make up for the loss of Panarin's effect on Patrick Kane. And as it turns out, that was a lose-lose. Neither thing turned out for the Blackhawks. But Saad's still a young player. I think if you asked general managers around the league if they'd be interested in taking him on, he would. I don't think the Hawks should feel bad about that deal. He's a really good player who I think is having a bad year and just some bad luck, and I expect that next year he'll be back scoring in that 25 to 30 goal range.
If I'm Stan Bowman, I would do that deal again. On paper, I think it's the right move. I think Patrick Kane, you've seen from the 2015 Cup, from other years, he can play with anybody on his wing, and Toews needed a guy like Saad to get him going, and they had really good history together. So I still like that move. I still think he's going to bounce back.
Well, I like the combination of Toews, Saad, and Kane on the line. I don't know if you can afford that, you know, going forward, but it's obviously an option that you've seen it pay off a little bit, and maybe that's the kind of combination, even in the short term, if it gets Saad going a little bit, maybe that's a good thing for him. It's just, you know, you're seeing a little bit of the lack of depth, and you're also seeing some of the younger players taking time to adjust and growing into their games. I think DeBrincat's been terrific. I think Schmaltz could have a big year next year, too. And if you have those two guys to build around and some of the other young forwards come through, that's great. But I do think over the offseason, they have to shore up the defense. I don't think they found really, I don't think they have three pairs they can count on for next year.
All right, there you have it. And now we are joined by 2018 Olympic gold medalist Kendall Coyne. Kendall, thanks so much for making time for us. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Now, Kendall, you and your fiancé, Michael Schofield, will be greeting fans at the Plush Horse in Palos Park on Friday. That's tomorrow, if you're listening today, on Thursday, from 7 to 9 p.m. Make a donation. Get their autograph. All donations will go to the Chiappetti family, whose son David was seriously injured in a snowmobile accident last month. Kendall is also dropping the puck at Saturday's high school championships at the UC. Now, Kendall, my dad was born at 75th and Cicero, so I have been a Rainbow Ice Cream family, now a Rainbow Cone family, but my wife is from Orland. Her family's still there. All I've ever heard about is the Plush Horse. What should I get? We're taking the kids tomorrow to come see you guys. What should I get there?
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you for the support. And sure. I know the Chiappetti family is obviously very thankful as well, but cookies and cream is my favorite. A lot of my siblings' favorite is the white cookie monster, but you honestly can't go wrong with any flavor. It's all amazing and just a great place to on the south side.
I think my daughter liked the cookie monster. I think we'll go with that.
They have the blue one, too.
So oh, nice. Nice. That doesn't sound like it'll be messy at all. Great. We're Kendall, just so you know, we're joined by Joel Knowles, the Chicago Tribune sports editor, is with us, too, today.
Hello, Kendall.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Chris has an upper body injury. I know you talked to him recently. He is trying to make his throat better for the pre- and post-game show. So Kendall, you really have been making the rounds, going out and about, and making yourself available to everyone for interviews, for pictures, for autographs. I know you said you were at Costco and someone asked you if you had your gold medal a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's been awesome to be back home, and the support has been overwhelming, and I've heard from so many people while I was over in South Korea, so just to be able to come back home and share the experience with everyone has been important to me, but also special because there's so many people that have had a helping hand in my journey, and just to be able to say thank you and show my appreciation is so important.
Besides your busy schedule, how is life different after winning a gold medal?
It's been pretty different, but not too much. Just a little bit, you know. Sometimes some kids come knocking on the door, or when I'm out, people just say, "Do you have your medal?" And but I think as time goes on, people might I'm hoping that everyone has seen the medal in a few years, so they might not want to continuously see it. But it hasn't been too much. And honestly, the biggest thing is the driving force to want to get back there again.
And Kendall, that brings up a question. You're only 25. I think you turned 26 in May. Are you still mm-hmm. planning to compete at that level, and you have your sights on the next Olympics?
Yeah, it would be an honor and amazing journey if I could represent the United States at my third Olympic Games. But obviously, it's 4 years away. It would be a dream come true. But there's so many things in my control and out of my control. And hopefully, if I can be there, it would be a dream come true.
Kendall, what age were you when you realized you could really utilize your speed and that was something that would set you apart from everyone else?
I would say I was pretty young. I more recognized it in when I was playing baseball and softball. When I was young, the softball teams I played against, they would always have like a shift for me specifically because I was lefty and I was fast. And I think that's when I realized I was a little bit faster than most people my age.
Kendall, I was looking at your background. I know you went to Sandberg High, as Scott pointed out, 2 years Southsider. You have a brother who's in the Army now. Is that true?
Yes, yep. He's in Fort Gordon, Georgia. He is doing his basic officer leadership training course there, and he's in the cyber branch. So he's fighting behind a computer screen, working really hard, and doing things that most of us can't comprehend.
Or probably talk about.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, it, besides his training, it just puts a little bit more weight on my shoulders to be able to represent the United States when I see him leave here in fatigues and I get to wear a hockey jersey. So it just makes it that more special and that much more of an honor, too.
I know you're a lifelong Blackhawks fan, Kendall. Is it difficult for you to see them struggle the way they have this season and not make the playoffs, or do you just kind of appreciate all the recent accomplishments and hope that they do better next season?
Yeah, and I mean it's tough to watch, obviously, for anybody as an athlete, a fan. a coach, whoever it is. It's tough to when you don't succeed, but as an elite athlete, having a fiance in the professional sports world, you understand that side of sports, and it is pro sports, and there are down years, and you hope for a better year next year, but you also are, you know, keep in the back of your mind what you need to do better and work hard this summer coming up.
Speaking of your fiance, I guess, you know, we would have liked to seen him sign with the Bears somehow. I know Chris Bowden has talked to you about that and with him. But, I mean, not too bad to go to the Chargers for 2 years. Not a bad living condition there. Are you guys going to be doing that soon?
Yeah, I mean, I would have loved the Bears personally, just being a little bit closer to home. But we're so excited to be out in L.A. and more so the Costa Mesa area and just start life together out there. And I'm sure I'll be coming back and forth from L.A. to Chicago and training and stuff. But, yeah, we're really excited. He loved his teammates and the organization last year, so I know he's thrilled to get back. And they have a heck of a football team, so it should be an exciting year.
And again, Kendall and her fiance Michael Schofield will be at the Plush Horse from 7 to 9 p.m. on Friday for a great cause. Thank you, Kendall, so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Good luck with everything.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Goodbye, Kendall.
Okay, bye-bye.
There we have it. 25, she's going to be 26.
Yeah. She's still got
a
future.
Gold medal, a lot of international.
Six world championships. She's been in 5 gold medals there, 1 silver medal, 2 Olympics, 1 gold and a silver. Pretty good resume for a 25-year-old.
I think you got an exclusive out of her. I haven't heard her talk about the next Olympics, really. And it sounds like she's planning on it.
Well, it's 4 years off, but I would think at her age she'd still have a shot. You know, I know that it's probably pretty competitive for spots in that roster, but I think she's a player they would value, and I think that if she still wants to do it, she probably could make that team.
Yeah, I think there were girls on the roster this time around that were over 30, and I mean, that whole team was phenomenal.
Yeah, they really, I'll tell you, that was a great Olympics to watch. It was really a terrific rivalry you got to see on display there with the U.S. and Canada. They've gone head-to-head now. I was at the first Olympics in Nagano in 1998, the first Olympics at which there was women's hockey was a medal sport. And that was the last time the U.S. team won the gold medal. So I know they've been dying to get back there. And it was a great event to see, you know, when you see players who've competed against each other for so long, you could see the heartbreak of the Canadian player who didn't even want to wear the silver medal. You know, some people say that's bad sportsmanship, and I guess I can understand that. But, you know, to be a competitor at that level, when you lose a game to your fiercest rival the way they lost it, it's almost understandable that you would feel, you know, pretty upset. So I would cut her a little slack for that.
Want to get back into Alex DeBrincat just for a little bit before we wrap things up. And, you know, there was something kind of good to come out of Tuesday's 5-1 loss where they get eliminated mathematically from the playoffs. You see this young kid, Alex DeBrincat, 20 years old, records his third hat trick of the season. First rookie in Hawks history to do it. Second U.S.-born player to do it. I think only 5 other guys in the NHL did that or more the rookie year. What can you expect from a guy like this? Do you expect him to keep building on this elite skill level already, Joe?
Well, you know, if you watch him over the course of the season, he kind of hit a little bit of a wall in the middle, but he's come back nicely. I mean, his size was an issue, I know, when he came into the NHL. They were concerned whether or not he'd be able to handle it's a pretty tough league. But I think he's got some upside. I mean, depending on how you want to use him and who he'd be playing with in the future, I could see him growing into a 30, 35 goal scorer pretty easily. And if you add a player like that to your lineup and you still got the dangerous players they already have in Patrick Kane and others, he could really be a future scoring title winner. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. I know he's small, and I know his first year, this is a small sample size. But I see a lot of good things in him. I see instincts. I see really good hands. He's quick. He's got skill. Sky's the limit for him.
Yeah, quick hands is right. He's got a really quick release. I know Duncan Keith and a lot of other guys have noticed. And Duncan Keith also pointed out after Tuesday's game that he scores in bunches. So if he gets hot, watch out. And maybe he'll continue to play that way with maybe even a little more consistency. I think I have to look, but he might have an outside chance at the Calder run. You know, only 8 games remaining, but I think he's in the running.
Well, I think he leads the Hawks in goals now, or close to it.
He's tied with Kane at 25.
Yeah, and there's probably some other competition for the Calder Trophy, but he'll definitely get some consideration. I would think he might be a finalist, and that's a nice honor for him. I know he was drafted a little lower down than some of the players who came into the league with higher expectations, but I think he's shown well for himself, and he's got a bright future here. I'm sure the Hawks are looking to for him for some big things from him.
Joe, thank you, sir, for joining us today. Appreciate it. Great to see you.
Scott, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks for having me on.
Again, Jay Knowles 31, not 13.
No, 31.
13 is unlucky, even in Twitter. On Twitter, follow Joe. He'll write more columns on the Hawks. Maybe you'll see him on the arena cam again.
It's possible.
Looking at the red light that is in outer space. Kendall Coyne, thanks to her for calling us. And go check out her and Michael's event at the Plush Horse Friday in Palos Park from 7 to 9. She's at Kendall Coyne on Twitter. And follow me and Chris on Twitter at Scott King Media, at Bowden Tweets. And remember to subscribe to the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast on iTunes, if you're an iTunes person, and leave a review and follow all our content on Facebook at facebook.com/Blackhawks Crazy. Thanks, everybody. Take care.